Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable on the Roundtable. It is Monday, the 18th of March, and it's a delight to introduce our panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Morning Edition host David Gastina joins us.
Joe.
And our David. And our Capital correspondent Karen DeWitt is back, and hopefully with what is a Monday tradition.
Ah, yes, I am.
I'm here. Yes, a delight to have you here.
Aren't you missing developments at the Capitol?
I'm worried about that, but no. Things are going to start in about an hour there.
Yeah. They don't get up that early.
Yeah. They were up late last night, too.
Karen will make a beeline for the door. And so if you don't hear Karen at one point during the hour, you know that she's
gone to the
leaders'
meeting.
Head south, the mile and a half down the road. Well, hey, that's a big story. Sunday evening, state lawmakers huddled for 3.5 hours to hash out the details of the state $136.5 billion budget. And there's a couple of issues, and let's take them in order. Number one is that, I guess in and of itself, and I don't know whether this is a big deal or not, because it's people doing their jobs, and I don't know whether we should applaud people for doing that or not, but it could be early, it could be on time. And I mean, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, you know, in Albany, it's still a novelty, even though this would be the third year in a row. It's partly because of the schedule of the holidays. Passover starts Monday, then Easter, and Easter's on the 31st. So they don't want to be there over the holidays, and they don't want to come back in April. So they're trying to get it done on time. This is one of Andrew Cuomo's things to show that government is functional. Of course, they're still having secret leaders meetings. We don't really know what's in the budget except for leaks that are coming out. But, you know, you can't have everything, I guess, right?
So when you have these secret leaders meetings like they had yesterday, mm-hmm. last night, mm-hmm. 3.5 hours, the governor was quoted, I believe I heard on your story last week, which was, you know, we're like 98% of the way there, but, you know, you can be, and he said, yep. you could be on the 2-yard line and still not get, yep, the touchdown.
Every deal depends on every other deal, and then they try to stuff new things in at the last minute. For instance, extending the income tax surcharge on millionaires. That came up Thursday evening. I think it got leaked out by the AP and the Buffalo News, although who knows? They could have been planning that all along, and we just heard about it then.
Right.
So interesting things come up at the end that nobody seemed to have ever heard about to the last minute. So that's always what's interesting about the budget. Even a seemingly straightforward budget like this one was turning out to be, it gets complicated by the end.
I predict that they will come up with an on-time budget and do it early. And the reason for that is all of a sudden these geniuses figured out, Karen should not be attached to my remarks, but these geniuses have figured out that their ratings go up when they get an on-time budget done, because for God's sakes, we can just figure out that people want the people's business done. And for all of these years, they were barking up the wrong tree. And now they're basking in the sunlight of having gotten these budgets done on time. And they will get a budget done on time. That's one. And two, Andrew Cuomo can have anything he wants. Anything he wants. The Assembly is progressive, all right, and they want more than he wants because he's sort of a closet Republican. But he can have whatever he wants, because the minute the Republicans don't give him what he wants, they're out. They're done.
Although he is having trouble with the Senate Republicans right now over the issue of minimum wage. They've been hesitant about that. They're talking about a so-called training wage
for
youth. I guess it means you get paid less if you're a teenager.
You don't get the minimum wage.
While you're supposed, yeah, you don't get the, you get below whatever the minimum wage is going to be.
And then at some point when you get older, they take the training wage off,
yes,
and then you can ride the bike by yourself?
Yeah, they're thinking maybe by age 20 or something like that. So you make less money, essentially, that would be. And small businesses, I guess, would benefit because they wouldn't have to pay the full minimum wage.
They are that's right. They're advancing the idea that exploiting kids is okay in order to keep them to work.
I suppose that's one way of putting it.
The question seems to be what the wage will be, right? Isn't that the issue?
Yeah, there's been various proposals, and everybody's been upping the ante lately to $9. The Assembly Democrats, President Obama, Governor Cuomo had $8.75. The Senate One House budget didn't have a number. Also, the question is, should you index it to inflation in the future so it automatically increases every year? We don't have to have these fights that go on for years.
And you have different minimum wage in Massachusetts and in Connecticut, so that complicates it
That's
as
right.
well.
That's right. I guess ultimately it would be better to have a federal minimum wage, but there isn't a lot of hope that,
that
President Obama and Congress are going, the way things are going in Washington right now. It's not going to happen. So states have to take action on their own if they want to do this.
I predict that, no, this is somewhat cynical, that they will not
we
only
need to
index,
get a sounder for that.
I predict.
They will not only index the, they will only index the minimum wage when they index their salaries.
Yes, which could be arguable something they should have done years ago, because they're probably never going to get a raise now. It never seems like there's the right time for that to happen, because there's always some kind of scandal or negative news coming out of Albany that makes it difficult, or a recession, so that they never get their wages raised since 1999.
Well, you can't hear it, but I can, because I'm sensitive to these things, Karen. When you just said they may never get a raise, there was applause all over the region.
The when you look at this issue of the budget, and we hope that it seems that they can wrap it up by the end of the week, by Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, just one thing I want to mention about that the reason why they want to get a deal today is they want to let the bills age in public for 3 days, instead of the governor giving an emergency message of necessity. I see Joe's laughing there.
Yeah, well, that's because the governor, watching them age,
don't compare it to a fine wine.
Well, like putting them in
I guess that's the technical term that they use. But the governor got a lot of blowback when he didn't do that for the gun law, where it was passed within 20 minutes after the bill was printed, really literally, and a lot of people didn't read it. So he wants this time to do it, the proper way.
So lying in state in the rotunda of the Capitol is the budget, and people can look in.
So if they print them by 11:59 tonight, then they can start voting on Thursday, because today will count as a day as long as it's before midnight.
Will the legislators have time to read it too?
Well, theoretically they will. They'll have a couple of days to do it. Of course, also the lobbyists have time to read it then too, and then they could start pushing back on things. So it opens up a whole other can of worms. But that's why the pressure is on today, so they could pass it Thursday and Friday, because I think the governor just doesn't want to do the message of necessity this time.
Right now, for your schedule, do you know what's going on as far as meetings and so forth?
I told that around 11 o'clock, there's going to be a leaders' meeting.
Okay.
So, and I don't know if they'll come out with a decision then, or if it's going to be going on into the afternoon. You never know on these days. You have to just go there prepared for anything, really.
I want to switch topics a little bit and talk about the governor. And this all has to do with the budget ultimately, but he had tough words on Friday for local officials facing a fiscal crisis. Crises and seeking more help from Albany, telling them they should consolidate services or whole governments and school districts rather than looking for relief from Albany.
Yeah, that's because Albany doesn't have a lot of money. State government doesn't have a lot of money. There's a 2% property tax that's squeezing them. And frankly, the governor and legislature are kind of reluctant to do the so-called mandate relief that's needed, because a lot of it would go against the unions, and they don't want to do that. So they're in kind of a bind, and I think it's just easier to tell local governments, well, hey, you got to do something about
this. County execs aren't happy, right?
And to David's point, so you're a town, executive, you're a mayor, county supervisor, and suddenly you're being told, it's on you. Okay, but there is the mandate issue. That's the first thing.
They don't have a lot of control over health care costs, pension costs, bargaining with the unions, and that's, personnel, obviously, is their biggest cost, and employees and benefits for them.
So there's not a lot they can do other than consolidation, which is basically changing the face of local governments. I don't know. It struck me as an issue, perhaps a larger issue than it was made out to be, in the sense that we were basically, in some ways, reformulating the way we look at government in the state of New York.
I think the governor's been hoping that for a while, that it'll force...
And his father before him.
That will force these consolidations. The problem is, when you get right down to these multitude of local governments, they don't want to consolidate.
No.
There's a lot of pushback. Even consolidating simple services like highway plowing. For instance, the town that I live in, which is out in the country somewhere. The town supervisor wanted to merge the town highway department with the sure. county highway department. And people really were up in arms over that and didn't want to do that, even though he said, well, it'll save money. But they said, no, this is our department. So
it's
very
police departments yeah, all the time.
So difficult politically to do.
And if I may just take it away from New York, because I live in Massachusetts, where a lot of good people live. You know, we have two school districts. The Southern Berkshire Regional School District, and then there's the Berkshire Hills Regional School District. There are fewer people in both of them now than there used to be when we arrived in the Berkshires in 1970, and they will not, I mean, they will not combine those two school districts. It's just plain nutty because a lot of guys in green pants want to go to the annual school committee meeting in Cape Cod every year.
Well, the problem with that, though, with the high schools is the kids being on the buses for so long.
That's the problem.
So that's another obstacle that you face. And are they going to stay at home and learn over the internet? Or are they going to take a bus ride for 2 hours? I know. So it does get complicated.
In the meantime, they're trying to build a new high school in Great Barrington that's going to cost many, 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 many billions of dollars. And at the same time when this kind of thing could happen. I just raise it, Joe, because I don't want anybody out there who lives in Massachusetts to feel we're ignoring them.
Well, it's an interesting now I have just this vision of this person in green pants, but it's I find it fascinating with the I find it happy holidays. I find it fascinating that you have the governors are being very critical of these local governments who seem like they're just scrambling, trying to figure out what to do and to do something with the scraps that they're given.
Well, will this raise its ugly head at any point is my question. Well, will it impact when it gets down to that local level and people start to scream and yell? I mean, will it have any impact?
And Alan's absolutely right. This is Massachusetts, Connecticut, Vermont. I mean,
right.
This is everywhere we talk about.
But Massachusetts has, I think, fewer layers of government than New York, right?
That's right. We don't have county government.
Yeah.
But we talk about consolidation a lot.
Well, we already saw the Democratic Party co-chair, handpicked by Cuomo, Syracuse Mayor Stephanie Miner, talking
we've had her
about
on, we've had her here
yes,
on
how
the
she's
yeah.
her city is being squeezed by this, and the
Gutsy
governor's
lady.
Offering this pension stabilization smoother, and she was saying that was just a gimmick, and so there has been pushback. Not that many mayors have joined her, though. I have to say, I think they're a little bit nervous about doing that.
Well, sure. Would you want to take on Andrew Cuomo?
Well, it seems like most people really don't want to be in that fight. But,
no.
But she's certainly been leading it so far.
She's terrific.
We are going to take a quick break. We are going to continue and talk about some other things going on in the state of New York as well as beyond its borders. We will continue our conversation. A reminder, you can join us by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org, or you can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable, at WAMC Roundtable. Karen DeWitt is here. David Gustina is here. Alan is here. And we welcome you in the conversation as well. We'll return after this short break. Welcome back to our roundtable on the roundtable for this Monday, the 18th of March, as we brace for a snowstorm. We have lots of issues to talk about, and we are checking them off of our list one by one. There is a interesting editorial in the Albany Times-Union this morning about entitled "There's No Limit on Such Pain." And this comes almost a year after an editorial in the New York Times in June of last year about a bill that was put forward by Margaret Markey of Queens, a Democrat assemblywoman, that would eliminate the statute of limitations on sex crimes. And it's a fascinating issue for a number of reasons. One, of course, is the fact that there has been inaction on this, and it has not been something that has had legs, if you will, to move on and become law. The second is, of course, it gets talked about many times when we talk up, especially recently with a new pope and the issues with the Catholic Church. It seems to be the biggest lobbying against this legislation has come from the Archbishop of New York, Timothy Dolan, as well from various factions of Orthodox Jews who have had problems with this as well. So the question is, when you look at something that seems to be somewhat of a no-brainer, you do have to say, well, what is it that takes why is this such a tough sell within the halls of the Capitol?
One small thing. I think I saw Karen ready to say the same thing. This has to do with civil litigation.
Civil litigation.
In other words, it's not penal. It's not criminal. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that I can, if I'm abused,
civil
I can
statute. Although, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I was actually going to say I wasn't totally familiar with the tenets of this bill.
Because I think
but,
it's criminal. I believe it's criminal and
but
civil.
I know a lot of these issues are swirling around the Women's Equality Act, which is this 10-point plan that Governor Cuomo has that also includes codifying the tenets of Roe v. Wade and a woman's right to choose. And so I think all of these things are going to get addressed and hashed out after the budget is done, I would think. At least the governor's pushing for that, but there's a lot of, you know, pushback as well on some of the parts of the Women's Equality Act if it's taken as a whole.
So what do you think, Alan? How do you, I mean, if you're a lawmaker, how do you,
well,
I mean, you think of Margaret Markey and you think, wow, you know, you have to be discouraged when you can't get something like this passed.
Well, you know, I think, look, the organized religion has a tremendous amount of clout in the legislature. The Senate is obviously the more conservative of the two houses. And in the old days, before the Senate was divided among these three verschlungene, you know, conferences, there was no question. It just wouldn't have come up. They just would not have allowed it onto the floor. But now you got King Andrew pulling the levers, saying either we're going to have this or we're not going to have this. And he has those five guys in the so-called, you know, group of five, whatever you want to call them. Some people call them the traitors. I like that phrase, the traitors, who have left the Democratic conference to side with the Republicans for some committee chairmanships and other things. And those guys are going to insist that this kind of legislation at least get a vote. At least I think they will.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are. You're referring to the Independent Democratic Conference.
Yeah,
I think they prefer to call themselves around
Albany, they
I think like the governor's viewed as very powerful, but I don't think he has total control over the legislature. Certainly there's the implied threat that he could get the Independent Democratic Conference together with the rest of the 27
exactly.
Senate Democrats and, you know, maybe encourage them to form a coalition and shut the Republicans out. But I think in some things like this,
he needs to
let it play out, and that's I think that's a test of that new Senate coalition between the IDC and the Senate Republicans. Are they going to let some of these more progressive issues come up once the budget is done?
Well, that's how we got gay marriage. That's how we got the minimum wage, yeah. Obviously.
And I think, as we mentioned before, and that's how the Republicans lost three Republican
senators
during for the gay
well,
marriage.
Well, they have a so choice. They can be in the minority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or they can lose some more senators.
I know. They really don't have a good scenario, do they? I'm not really sure what
their
game plan can
be. No, they're on the downward spiral.
Yeah. At this point, they're happy to have their committee chairmanships and to have some power and to be in the leaders' meetings. At this point, and that's probably about all they can then hope for. Because if they don't do a lot of the progressive agenda, then the Democrats will get after them. If they do, they'll get primaried in their own districts. So really not sure what their game plan is. It's a very difficult position that they're in.
I just want to read the, and we got about a minute before we go to break, but according to the Catholic Conference's statement, allowing lawsuits claiming sexual abuse at any time in history does nothing at all to protect children today, but imposes potentially catastrophic costs on organizations that provide charitable, educational, health care, spiritual benefits essential to communities across New York State.
To which one could say, tell it to the kid who's been abused.
Not only that, having a chance to air that abuse and something that a lot of these young people kept inside for so many years. And then to have an opportunity to express what's happened and through a civil suit.
Well, sometimes it's the only way. In 5 years or 6 years. Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes that's the only way they can get over it, really.
That's right. There's a lot of healing that goes on in that process.
We are going to take a break. We're going to get some NPR news, and then we will return our conversation. We would love to hear from you as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. We'll continue after this short break. Welcome back to the Roundtable. On the Roundtable, we have a wonderful panel before us. Alan Chartok is here. Morning Edition host David Gustina joins us, as well as Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt. And I either pulled, I've either gone deaf or I pulled the cord out of my headphones. So let me just, because otherwise it seems like I'm not speaking. That's very odd.
We can hear you.
Yes,
as long as the listeners
have our headphones on.
Excellent. See,
that's right.
There we go. The 10th anniversary. It is tomorrow marks the 10th anniversary of the Iraq War. A new poll is out. 53% in the U.S. see the Iraq War as a mistake. 10 years have passed since the U.S. and its allies invaded Iraq, and it appears the majority of Americans consider this a regrettable anniversary. 53%, as I mentioned, of Americans believe their country, quote, made a mistake sending troops to fight in Iraq. 42% say it was not a mistake. Looking back, what do you think? Do you think that the United States made a mistake sending troops to fight in Iraq? That was a question asked in the survey, and it is a fascinating question. It is down from a high of 63% in 2008, who saw the war as the wrong decision. So that is interesting to note as well.
Well, Joe, interestingly, if you'd only get up when I get up, well, you do. You get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, don't you?
Yeah, I get up early.
Okay, so I listened to the BBC on the way in, and there was a wonderful story this morning. They've done a major investigation of the evidence that was used to precipitate the war. And it turns out, of course, which we all sort of knew, that it was phony. I remember, David Gustina, you probably remember this, my debating Mayor Koch on this very issue. And Mayor Koch insisted to the day he died that they had weapons of mass destruction over there.
And said Bush shouldn't have said there weren't.
And I said, the president has said that there aren't. And he said, he shouldn't have said that. So, you know, if you want to believe it, you believe it. But the fact of the matter is, it was all jerry-rigged. It was the so-called evidence did not exist, and they made it up. And they've sort of, this investigation sort of let Tony Blair off the hook and said, well, it would only have been bad if he didn't really believe they had it, and he really believed they had it, even though the evidence was made up.
You know, it's hard to go back to that time in our minds. I actually, thankfully so. That was 2 years after September 11th, or really just a year and a half after September 11th, 2001. People were scared then. Mm-hmm. And I think then President Bush, Vice President Dick Cheney were sort of, maybe they were scared too, but they were good at sort of portraying that everything was scary. And people were afraid, I think, in a lot of ways to speak up. And a lot of people in the media didn't. Paul Krugman, the New York Times columnist, had a very interesting blog item about that, saying people in the media decided or figured it was a career-ending move if they were going to speak out against, well, maybe, you know, maybe we shouldn't be so hasty to go to war. Is there really weapons of mass destruction? And it seemed like people who did speak out against it kind of ended up getting smeared or thought of as fools. And
Phil Donahue.
Well, there was a form of you're against me mentality. I mean, either you're with us or you're against us.
I would tell you all that we were pretty open about the whole thing here at Public Radio and explored both sides. You will remember, I hate to say this, but we had Scott Ritter on a lot. And he had been a weapons inspector over there, and he maintained that there were none. He turned out to be absolutely right, although as a human being, somewhat more fallible.
Yeah, it was complicated because he had some personal troubles that were also, you know, brought to the public just when he was speaking out about all of those things as well. So
you guys find it interesting.
Very coincidental.
Hard to say. It seems like Americans just want to kind of sweep it under the rug. Well, think about it. It was a bad time. It seemed like a bad decision.
Look at how the public opinion changed. From 63% in 2008 now to 53%. Isn't it interesting how over time the memory and the remembrance and how
changes? And an age thing, too. We find that older people who are in this survey, older people are more upset about it and say that it was a wrong decision.
I can only say one thing
as well.
It was all about that battleship of Maine at war with that great country, Spain. You will remember that that was a dubious blow up also. And that's what got us into the Spanish-American War.
You know, you mentioned Ed Koch, but former Defense Secretary Robert Gates was interviewed by CNN over the weekend, and he said, you know, it's still too soon to tell. And he said, I don't think you're really going to be able to know whether it was a good thing or a bad thing for another 10 or 15 years. Now,
well, we could give him that, I suppose, because we don't know the future.
Absolutely.
But it seems in at least the short term of 10 years.
But you do sort of wonder what could happen in that 10 or 15 years that would make it, like, a good thing. But that would have been my follow-up question, but they didn't ask it.
I guess
just a stable Middle East, I guess.
Yeah,
you know, you would hope democracy.
They introduced the concept of a preemptive strike. In other words, you know, we weren't being attacked, but we saw this as a threatening situation, and we're going to go in and stop it before anything happened. And that policy got real pushback.
Yeah, and does that deter other countries?
We see.
We don't really know that yet.
North Korea saying the same thing now about coming after us.
Well, yeah, but you also worry about the whole Arab Spring thing and all of the people who have gotten up there and are siding with this group or that group. And as Joe has just brilliantly indicated, we don't know if we're getting into a lot worse situation than we had before.
Well, we still have sectarian tensions. We still have violence on the rise. We still have concerns, and again, you're absolutely right, Karen. We don't know. I mean, we don't know what's going to in 10, 15 years. But you know, here we are 10 years later, and it still seems as though we didn't accomplish what we set out to accomplish.
I don't know. I don't know that we knew what we said.
Yeah, well, I was
going to
say, what was except for to get rid of Saddam Hussein,
right?
Which did happen, and you know, by all accounts, he was
a very bad man. I mean, I think that's what's so interesting.
Treated his people in a very terrible way. Some of his people in a very terrible way.
But what's so interesting, Karen, is that he was our guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, we made that guy what he was
up until a certain point.
Yeah, yeah.
And he wasn't. But it hasn't been
the first time the U.S. has done something like that.
But to your point about the mission being accomplished, that doesn't matter whether you then talk about 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, or 100 years. If it wasn't defined and it was, then it's not really going to matter, right?
Yeah, you can never really judge what exactly it was.
What do we do and what was it?
It's just hard to tell right now. We're just totally in the middle of this point in history with the Middle East, and we don't know which direction it's going in. So you can't really totally judge it until, you know,
a whole separate area, though,
100 years from now, 50
years from
now.
The impact on the soldiers, the impact on the folks coming back.
About the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt and some of the terrible things that are coming out of that. So if you're Barack Obama and his people, you have to decide, is this inevitable? Is this going to happen? If it does happen, should we be left out in the cold or should we have been on the side, you know, of the, quote, revolution? That's the issue.
Make state government seem easy in comparison.
Not really.
No, maybe not.
I want to go to a break in a few moments. And before we do, one more issue. And that is the Senate plan that was announced over the weekend. The nation's 11 million illegal immigrants would have to wait a full decade for a green card, but could earn citizenship just 3 years after that, under a provision being finalized by a bipartisan group of 8 senators working to devise an overhaul of immigration law. That's according to the New York Times published yesterday. Taken together, the two waiting periods would provide the nation's illegal immigrants with a path to U.S. citizenship in 13 years, matching the draft of a plan by President Obama to offer full participation in American democracy to millions who are living in fear of deportation. The arrangement would shrink the amount of time it takes to become a naturalized citizen to 3 years from 5 years, but in appeal to Republicans, it would also extend to 10 years from 8, the amount of time that illegal immigrants must wait before receiving permission to work in the U.S. permanently. What do you make of this, Alan?
Well, clearly, the infrastructure of the United States right now is being on the backs of many of these people who are here, who are working, who are being exploited. My sense of it is, although I'll be criticized for saying this, that the Republicans would like that to continue. And the compromise, but they really got stiffed in the election. So they have to worry about that. So now with that on their heads, they come up with this idea of 10 years waiting. So that's 10 years. 10 years is a long time for a certain amount of indentured servitude.
Yeah, it definitely does seem like a long time, but at least would be some compromise to get out of this thing that's been going on for so long with no decision what you do. But these people are in this country, and particularly the children were born here to undocumented parents who really are barred from going to college. And in New York State, they're trying to do the so-called DREAM Act, where they would pay for college tuition. But you can get up to high school, you can go to public schools, but then you're kind of stuck into this kind of permanent underclass if you can't get ahead with education. Exactly. And that's something that's it doesn't benefit anybody.
I mean, as the demographics change in the country, and you know, Hispanic population is booming, and you see what are the ramifications for the two parties? And you would think, Alan, I would think you would agree that the Republican Party could be hurt if they don't move.
Yeah, but on the other hand, those rascally people may be, in fact, figuring, okay, give it 10 years, and in 10 years we may be back in the White House and everything else, and therefore, 10 years a lot can happen. Mm. Or as Mario Cuomo used to say, a new pope could be born.
When
the way popes are coming and going,
more of a chance of that than ever.
Right, yeah. When you look at this as an issue, do you think that we are near a point? I mean, obviously the path to citizenship, which is a great concern for many Republicans. But when you see this bipartisan support and you see this details emerging from the 8 senators that are working on this, do you think they've realized that now's the time to come up with a plan?
I don't know. We've seen some small groups of senators have these bipartisan compromises on other topics, and who knows? Things don't seem very good in Washington right now.
But as you said before, Karen, if it's a matter of holding your finger up into the wind and saying, if I do this and act in a reasonable fashion, I will be defeated in a primary. I don't want to do that.
We would love to hear from you. You can join us by emailing us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page, or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. Karen is going to head off to the Capitol and
so we have some news today.
And do her
job. Yes,
do
the governor
her job. Yes, and cover this budget issue. Of course, we will have her reports throughout the day and on Northeast Report late edition. Later on today.
That's right.
Karen, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks a lot, guys. It was fun.
Coming up next, we will talk about what's on your mind. Sarah LeDuc will join us and tell us how you can get involved. And also, we will talk about bracketology with Ian Pickus. It's coming up next right here on the Roundtable. In that 30-second break, I learned a couple of things. One, it's very hard to print out a bracket.
Nearly impossible, in fact.
Yeah. To get something
operator
that you can
error.
Actually read. No, I don't think so. No, I disagree with that because I tried to do it last night and I had trouble doing it.
So this is part of the push for smartphones and
absolutely.
Tablets.
Also, there was something else that I learned, too. Well, I forget. Oh, we'll get to that later. I remember. The other thing I learned is that we were going to read the comments from people, and, we don't have any. So that's the other thing I learned.
They were in rapt attention, Joe.
So Sarah came in with great purpose, and I said, are you ready for your report? And she said, I don't have a report.
But yeah, do you do it if you want to?
You email us at roundtable@wamc.org. You can comment on our webpage, which is wamc.org. Go to the Roundtable page. You can go to our Facebook page. You can go and tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. So there are many, many ways of doing this. So there really is no excuse, you see.
There's no excuse if you're a citizen.
That is right. And and we want you all to be citizens in the United States of WAMC. All right. Let us talk about what happened over the weekend and the NCAA. And I bring this up as a topic because I think in many quarters, in many water coolers across the country, this is the topic that most people are talking about.
Most men are talking about.
I don't.
Pools are forming.
Yeah, I think pools are forming.
And most younger people are talking about, because here's what I want. I know nothing. I want you to explain to me what is this all about.
And for that, we welcome our news director, Ian Pickus. Hello, Ian.
Good morning, everyone.
All right. So there's two big issues here. Of course, one is the overall bracket, and two is our local interest in this. And
peaked right now.
Absolutely.
What is the bracket?
Okay, so I will throw this to Ian. Let him. Will you please explain to Alan what we're talking about?
I would be happy to. So we've got every college basketball league conference in the Division I level in the country has a champion. They've had their postseason tournaments, and now we know who the champions are. Those 31 teams have a bid into the big tournament. And there's 37 other teams.
They're being asked?
They're in.
Okay, yeah.
And then there's 37 other teams that get an at-large selection by, you know, they had a good year, they're high quality, so the tournament committee says that team should also be in the tournament, even though that team didn't win its conference tournament. So now we have 68 teams, which is about a fifth or a sixth of the college basketball teams in the whole land. Now everyone, starting Tuesday night, has the same equal shot as we sit this morning of winning a national championship. You have to win six games. It's harder for some of the smaller teams than others to get there, but the field is set, and this is the exciting part for me. By this a week from now, only 16 of the teams will be left, and that's sort of when it gets sad. But right now, it's all anticipation and hope and excitement, and we've got the bracket. We know where
teacher,
people are going.
Teacher, can I ask a question?
Sure.
Can a lowly team, and has it happened, win the whole game? The whole deal, even though they didn't win any championships or anything else, they just light up and they catch fire.
This has happened insanity. As soon as early as last year. Virginia Commonwealth was one of the last, very last teams to get in with an 11 seed. It goes up to 16, so they're fairly low in the pecking order. They had to win on the play-in round just to get in the whole tournament and ended up going into the Final Four. And effectively, if you make the Final Four, it's akin to winning the whole thing. I mean, there's only one national champion, but the Final Four is a tremendous deal. And so as of right now, it's not impossible. What happens is, as we get a couple days in, some of the lower seeds start dropping off. And, you know, a 16 seed is unlikely to win the national championship. But what makes it great is that it's possible. And the possibility and the hope, I think, is what makes everyone go crazy about the brackets. It's so much fun to imagine.
A lot of betting, right? There's a lot of betting on this.
There sure is, although I don't think you need to do it to enjoy it. For me, it's like, look at this. Albany matching up with Duke.
Talk
How
about
often
that
is that going to happen?
That was an exciting game on Saturday.
So, what happened? Well, Albany beat Vermont.
Saturday morning.
It went into the early afternoon, and it was they were awesome. It was a great game.
They then came from happened? Behind, right?
They started off down 10-0 and ended up leading 28-20 at the half, and they actually fell behind with 2 minutes to go, but they're Jacob Yachty, the second of the Yachty brothers to play at Albany, hit a pair of just absolutely clutch threes, and it's very exciting. Clutch three. They needed a three-pointer, and he stepped up and hit one when they had to have it. So if you're a follower of Albany, they haven't been there since 2007, and I think the two championships they did win in 06 and 07, they were the best team in the league. This time, they were the fourth seed. They kind of came out of nowhere to catch fire this week, and it's such a joyous kind of experience to see them in when no one expected it. It's so exciting.
And if the game against Duke is anything like they were the last time, it'll be exciting.
Is there a division? Has Albany always been a Division I in all sports?
They have only been Division I, I think, since 1999.
Right.
So in 13 or 14 basketball seasons, this is only the third trip, which is for a tiny league like they play in the America East to get in three times in 7 years.
Pretty
impressive.
So I was watching the selection show last night, which in and of itself is very weird. So they're doing the show, and they have all the players in Albany, and they're all sitting there. Were you there last night?
No,
I
was not.
You didn't get there.
No.
So they're all sitting there, and they're just waiting to see who they play. And then it comes on the screen that Albany's going to play Duke. I have great admiration for Albany. I think it's going to be a wonderful game, and my thoughts and prayers are with them. But I have to say, when I saw that come up, I was like, oh, you know, I mean, it's number two seed. Is that fair?
It's just an honor to be mentioned.
Fair?
Let me tell you, last year Duke was number two, and it lost to a 15 in Lehigh. So
they lost their last game, right? I mean,
and they lost to Maryland in the ACC tournament.
But right.
The fact that does happen, it's unusual. A 16 has never beaten a 1, but a 15 has beaten a 2, I think, 6 times now. So, and I got to tell you, UAlbany goes to play in Philadelphia on Friday against Duke. They played in Philadelphia in 06 against a number one, UConn, and led by 12.
That's right.
points with 11 minutes to go. They did not win the game, but it was tantalizingly close. So their attitude is, we can win. We only have to play them once, and we only have to beat them once. And that's what makes it so special.
Now, Duke has a terrific political science department.
That's true. I sat in on an interview you did with one of their James professors.
You know, it's we talk about the sports aspect of this, of course, but one of the other big issues is what this means for these teams. There are however many teams throughout the country. This is huge for Albany. This is huge for the region.
Iona's in.
I mean, not only for just the publicity that it gives the school, but the money that it comes with the T-shirts and the stuff and the things that they sell and the local economy and the restaurants and the bars that will be, of course, having all kinds of viewing parties of not only this game but of the tournament as a whole. It's really quite unparalleled when you think of an event that allows so many communities into it. It's not major cities. It's these smaller communities.
On the other hand, do we glorify sports too much? We just saw this terrible story about these two kids being, arrested and then convicted of sexual assault, of rape. Who came out of that sort of culture of we can do no wrong? When I said the political science department before, I meant, you know, what goes on at a university? We just had a thing on New York State government. We didn't get any participation. But maybe when you have a thing about sports, you get a lot more people. It's easier to digest. So there's another side to this, isn't there?
And Siena College has made the point that it had three straight years in the tournament.
Yeah.
And their applications went through the roof during that time, which is... It's silly if you think about it. I mean, I'm excited from a sports standpoint,
sure.
But you make a great point. This is certainly over-glorified,
well,
and I'm doing it myself right now.
No, you're terrific.
And if you're going to apply to a college because their basketball team made the NCAA tournament, I think that's very silly.
Well, yeah, but where else?
Be the first.
No. But where else do you get? I mean, you get that moment in the you have millions of people who are viewing, who are seeing that college. You get your moment in the spotlight,
mm-hmm.
And
it's priceless for these schools to see Albany and Duke on the same line for a week of the entire country filling out brackets. You can't pay for that kind of advertising.
And the college presidents know this. They oftentimes will up their sports programs or dump more money into the sports program because it sells.
Good point, David. And if nanotech gets to be its own college, it'll probably be the nanotech college basketball team.
The nanos.
Bananos.
The techineers.
Well, we do have banana slugs at UC.
The techies. So.
Yes, that's a, what do we have?
The banana slugs.
Oh, that's right. So, all right, and I know we'll be talking about this as the week goes on. But so, what do you want to make a prediction now? What do you think?
No, I need time to sleep and digest. It's like going to the track. You want to spend a day with the form before you start.
Okay,
everybody should know that Ian used to make his living doing a tout sheet, which he sold at the Saratoga racetrack.
And maybe I'll be back there soon, depending on how this panel works out.
Let's see. But I just meant the specific game, Duke and Albany.
I think Albany has its hands full, but I would certainly love to be surprised. I mean, hey, 75-70 Lehigh last year. I'm not going to forget that anytime soon.
I predict Albany will win.
You heard it here.
Yeah, you can't leave that.
I'm telling you, we need a sounder. Just bum, 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 bum.
I predict...
You can join us by emailing.
Think about the brilliance of that thing. Nobody will hate me for saying we want our team to win, and it'll be forgotten if and everybody out there knows that I know nothing about anything. So
about college basketball.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, Ian. That's very.
And on that note, we thank our panel: Alan Chartok, David Gustina, Ian Pickus, and of course Karen DeWitt, who left before the mayhem began. You can email us you can get involved by emailing us at roundtablewamc.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or by tweeting us at WAMC Roundtable. Folks, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank
I appreciate
you,
it.
Thanks. A masterful job.
Do it again. Do it again tomorrow, and we'll have a special guest, weather permitting, I believe, but special guests, Rex Smith, George Hurst, Mike Spain, Alan Chartok, myself, talking about Power of the Media. There you go. Tomorrow on Roundtable on the Roundtable. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.